Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
Welcome to the Gravity Podcast, where we host conversations on developing a Christian spirituality rooted in love that fosters resilient faith in everyday life. Good day, listener. This is the Gravity Commons Podcast. I'm Matt Tebbe, and I'm joined by Ben Sternke. We've been doing these intros for a while without our comrade. Oh boy.
Our estimable.
Without our friend, yeah. Chrissy Penley. She's on vacationing and doing, getting some well-needed rest. She only has so much tread on those vocal cord tires. Yeah. So she's got to
rest the pipes, save them for preaching.
Oh yeah. She's a good preacher. How are you today, Ben?
I am doing, I'm doing pretty good. Recovering from a very busy week last week, and at least at the time of this recording. So, feeling pretty good. Feeling good that the week is, at the time of this recording again, I got to preach this week though. So I need to sort of get my mind right about my schedule, make sure I reserve enough time. But I'm doing all right. How are you doing, Matt Tebbe?
I feel a little, Ben and I recently traveled and we're gone for a week, and I lost some like admin time, you know, I lost some like cranking through detail stuff time. Yeah. I just got a lot to do this week, and it's a short week because of various things. So feeling under the gun.
Under the gun. Amen. Amen to that. I feel like that's a feature of the modern economy. We can't get into this right now, but but I think about it a lot.
Yeah.
That there's it doesn't benefit us to be this busy.
Yeah.
We definitely need to be this busy to sort of like hustle to make ends meet. Most of us do anyway.
Yeah. Well, anyway. Something that I'm considering for our next class at the Gravity Commons community is to walk through Mammon. You know, I talk about Mammon quite a lot. And it's because I'm trying to get my head around it, my hands around it, trying to see it and name it. But a few years back, we did a class at our church that I think would translate pretty well to our virtual community and the Gravity Commons community. So if you haven't checked that out yet, we're wrapping up this month. We're wrapping up the gospel Jesus preached in the community. And it's been stimulating and exciting. And I'm thinking about doing that Mammon class next. And we'll talk about how our political economy benefits from our dehumanization.
Yeah. Yep. I'd come to that class, Matt.
Would you?
Yeah, I would. I would.
Well.
Yep. We'll have to talk about what comes next and where it all goes. But just a listener, if you're not subscribed, at least to our email list, go ahead and do that. Just go to gravitycommons.com and look for a place to put your email address.
Yeah.
And that way you'll hear about all of these classes and such coming up. And by the way, you can still sign up for the final class about the gospel, which is coming up the last Wednesday, the fourth Wednesday of July here. And you don't have to even have attended the previous classes, but if you want to attend that, you can go to gravitycommons.com/reconstructing. And find two ways to sign up for that. You can join the Gravity community as a paid member, or you can just pay what you want to just come to the one class. So
yes.
Anyway, there's info about that on that website. Speaking of getting together as well for classes and such, you know, part of this conversation that we're introing today, Matt, it was just a conversation between the two of us. It was answering a listener question about how to find a church after you've experienced abuse in the church.
Or
I think, you know, witnessed abuse in the church. So you don't even have to have experienced it yourself, but sometimes just seeing it happen and realizing mm-hmm. this isn't a safe place. Like, how do you find community? How do you find church after that happens? And so there's a lot of, we didn't just want to write an email because there's just a lot of things to think through when you think about that question. And I was just thinking about how, you know, our Gravity community online has, I think as of today, just over 600 members. So there's like 600 people. And when you apply, you have to actually, because there's a lot of spam bots out there, you actually have to write why you want to join the community. And Matt or I will read every single one of those just to, you know, say, is this a real person? And I'm always struck, Matt, by how many people are looking for just some kind of community, some kind of safe place where they can ask questions that they can't seem to find, you know, in their local geographic proximity. And I was thinking about that and how a lot of people have found a sense of community through online communities like that, a sense of community through listening to podcasts like the one you're listening to now, listener, and other podcasts. I know that other people, they have a sense, it's kind of a weird thing because all you're doing is listening to an audio file, but you do sort of get to know people and experience kind of a vicarious, I don't really know how to quantify it, but it's real for a lot of people that it's like, there's somebody else out there that's understanding kind of what I'm going through and what's happening for me. And anyway, we've got, I just wanted to make an explicit invitation to y'all listeners to join us. There's going to be a bunch of other podcasts, a bunch of other podcasters, a bunch of other people like you who are wanting to, excuse me, answer or ask questions about faith and explore new ways of holding faith, all of that kind of thing at Theology Beer Camp in Denver, Colorado, October 17th through 19th. The beer is optional. So that's, I think they've backed away from the beer part of it, just knowing that not everybody's into beer and some people are sober, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
But Theology Beer Camp, October 17th through 19th in Denver, Colorado. I'm excited to just kind of be with others who, you know, we want to have some fun together. We're probably going to record some live podcasts together. We're going to have a lot of interesting conversations together. There are some keynote speakers that I'm looking forward to. Brian McLaren, Diana Butler Bass, Ilya Delio. I think that's how you pronounce her name.
Yeah, she's awesome.
Yeah.
Isn't Brian Zahn going to be there?
I think Brian Zahn's going to be there, yeah. Our old friend. Our old friend, Brian Zahn.
You know, Ben, he doesn't like it when you call him old.
I don't think he minds. I talked to him about it. Okay. He's older than us, so yeah. No, anyway, he's been on the podcast like three times, so I don't know. We should have like a silver, like once you've been on the podcast three times, you get like a gold star, or like we send you a quarter in the mail, and you get an award, you get a prize.
Yeah.
There's a few people that have been on three or more times. And Brian is one of them. So anyway, I think he's going to be there. So yeah, lots of good folks, lots of good conversation. Oh, and here's the best part, Matt. I forgot about this. Do you want to know the best part?
Please.
The best part is because we are one of the podcasts that is like a featured podcast there. I can't remember what we're called. If you go and sign up and you use the code GravityHobbit, these guys are nerds. So Gravity Hobbit, you can get $50 off your registration. Isn't that great? It's amazing. Yeah. So if you want the info, listener, I would love it if you would join us there. GravityCommons.com/TheologyCamp. GravityCommons.com/TheologyCamp. Go there to find out all the info. That'll take you to their registration page, and then make sure you use the code Gravity Hobbit to get $50 off your registration. And I hope to see many of you in October.
All right. Well, now we can get into this convo about how to fight a church after experiencing abuse. And the question was specifically sexual abuse. So content warning, listener.
Yes.
We're talking about some sensitive things here. Make sure you take care of yourself as you listen.
Yes. All right. Let's get into it. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Gravity Commons podcast. Just Matt and I are here today. I'm Ben.
I'm Matt.
This is Matt Tebbe. It's just the two of us today for this section of the podcast, which sometimes happens, you know, various trips. People are on vacations sometimes. People are out on mission trips sometimes. I think that's what's happening right now. So, but anyway, we wanted to, every once in a while, we will like to do an episode like this where we will just chat about a topic of interest without a guest. And today we wanted to chat about a listener question. Somebody sent in a listener question. This was, I can't remember how you said this one came in, Matt. I don't know if this was an email or
Facebook message. An email to me. Okay. A woman named Marge sent it in.
Marge. Here's Marge's question. Have you ever considered writing something on people finding a place in the body of Christ after pastoral or clergy sexual abuse? Sometimes we don't have options to find a church with a woman pastor, so we have to find a new way to walk in some form of community with the male side of Jesus' community of believers. I know that you may not feel as a white male that you have a lot to say about this, but the longer I live and experience church culture, the longer I truly believe that change will only come from the voice on your side of the fence. And I think she's referring to you as a man, as a white man.
Also clergy, I think.
And yes, you fit all of those boxes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, as do I. And then she also, a later message said that I would also like to say that communities like Gravity Commons offer healing, a healing option for people struggling to find and trust a regular church setting again after abuse. I have plugged into Woodland Hills Church, which also has a wonderful online community. And these types of communities are a vital part of the journey towards healing. Mm-hmm. So anyway, we just wanted to chat a little bit about that rather than take the time to write about it. Sometimes topics like this, I think, work better as a conversation.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, how would you begin to answer that question, Matt? I hear Marge sort of struggling with, you know, I've had a bad experience in the church. I've had, you know, this experience of abuse in the church, and it's hard to know how to plug into a church community after that.
Yeah. Well, I'll say that we may have commented on this in passing during other episodes, but I've never written about this and we haven't podcasted about this until now because I am cautious as a, like you said, a white male pastor of speaking to people who have been and her words is pastoral sexual abuse. Speaking to people who've been harmed by pastoral sexual abuse about how to find another church, and the reason why I'm reticent or hesitant to do that is because too often what I see pastors and clergy doing is trying to bypass evil, wickedness, and pain that people have experienced in the church, and moving directly towards the solution to your injury, to your abuse, is to find a good church. Mm-hmm. And so it functions a bit to, A, not reckon with the actual harm or wrong that's done, and B, push people back towards an environment that they experienced trauma in.
Yeah.
Which is not wise.
Yeah.
Sorry. It's not kind.
Yeah.
and three, it serves and functions to sort of police people. I've used this analogy before, but this is what it feels like to me to do something like this. Imagine, Ben, you and I are in a hallway and we are walking past a room, and in the room there's a group of women sitting in a circle, and the sign on the door of the room says domestic and intimate partner violence support group. Mm-hmm. And as we listen, we hear a bunch of women who've experienced domestic or intimate partner violence, and we hear a number of them have divorced their partners that were violent towards them. Mm-hmm. And I think, as two people who are married and who believe in the sacrament of marriage, we both know that that is not the time or the place to pop in and give an unsolicited sales pitch for how, even though you experienced a bad marriage, marriage is still good.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. So it's not that these people who've experienced harm and abuse, that marriage couldn't be good for them again, mm-hmm. that there was is never a time and a place for them to hear about God's purposes for marriage. It's just like in this season, at mm-hmm. this time, in this environment, that's insensitive.
Right.
And coming from somebody in my place could be seen as being coercive and dismissive.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's an interesting... It's an interesting thing to think through, isn't it? Because when you think about, I mean, if what we're doing even now is this is public content, right? And we don't get to control the environment in which people hear this. We don't get to control the context into which people are hearing this, right? All that kind of thing. So an article would be the same way. But there is a context. So some of that context is very personal for people. So somebody might have experienced, you know, church abuse.
Yeah.
But then another part of that context is sort of the cultural milieu into which we are speaking, right? And so I think what you're naming is a kind of sensitivity to how your voice can come across to people who are hurting, you know, in that position. And, you know, even commenting on it, on how to find a church after an experience of abuse, even commenting on it, like you said, could be taken to be, you know, inside of this larger context, to be like, oh, in the midst of this, here's the most important thing. Make sure you find another church, you know?
Yeah. And so the other thing I was writing down about this question that I wanted to ask is, I think this question is answered differently depending upon how your church handled that clergy or pastoral sexual abuse. Mm. So if they believed you, if they paid for your counseling, if they put the pastor on leave, if they got an outside trauma-sensitive, trauma-informed organization to do an investigation, mm-hmm. if there was rectification and justice happening, right? If there was support and accountability and transparency, then I think finding another church means something different to you than if you don't get any of that.
Right. Yeah.
Which is way too often the case, right?
Yeah, it really is, sadly.
And so the reason I bring that up too is because the moving from your pain or what happened to you to let's move past that, or let's get you beyond that, or let's get you back to some place. Mm-hmm. Let's fix this problem. And the problem is you finding a church.
Yeah.
It really does serve to shortcut, I think, the healing process and to bypass pain. And it's frequently the instincts or the moves that the church does to the person who's experienced abuse.
Yeah.
I'm reticent to do it because it does mirror or mimic or map onto the moves people receive from churches where they experience abuse. Mm-hmm.
We'll be right back.
Listener, this ad is different than other ads. Ben and I are going to be at a conference, and we want you to join us. We did a national gathering for Gravity in 2017. We did a grief kind of retreat last summer, and we've been looking for ways to gather this year with all y'all because we love spending time with you. And we got invited into something called Theology Beer Camp, which is October 17th through 19th in Denver, Colorado. We're joining a host of other people from around the country. We're going to do some podcasting there. Ben, who all is going to be there?
I'm excited about Ilya Delio.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah.
The unbearable wholeness of being changed my life.
Yeah, incredible. Brian McLaren's going to be there. Diana Butler-Bass, Brian Zond.
We know him.
Other folks.
Yeah, there's going to be lots of podcasting, lots of keynote speaking, and lots of time to hang out. There's going to be a lot of relational time, and we may even record some podcasts. We'd love to record podcasts even with you, listener. They've given us a discount code for all of our listeners because we are a sponsor. Yeah. So if you go to gravitycommons.com/theologycamp and use the code GravityHobbit, that'll give you an idea of the kind of gathering we're doing here. You get $25 off tickets. Prices go up soon, so register today.
Yep. Beer is optional, by the way.
Yeah, but theology isn't.
Theology isn't, but the beer is optional. All right, that code again, or the website again, friends, is gravitycommons.com/theologycamp. And make sure to use our code GravityHobbit, two Bs, to get $25 off tickets. Hope to see you there.
Hey, the Gravity Commons podcast is supported by Respero. Henry Nouwen once wrote, "The role of a counselor is to help people not suffer for the wrong reasons," whichever they like. This is one of the guiding principles of Respero's counselor training. They equip you to listen deeply, ask great questions, and speak words of life into the hearts and minds of hurting people. Their training cohorts, which a lot of our listeners have actually gone through and have said that they really enjoy. Their training cohorts feature lots of personal interaction and practice with feedback, and it's all rooted in the belief that Jesus is the source of life. So check it out at respero.org and learn how to move people toward real transformation, not just symptom removal.
And if I may, Ben, for pastors and ministry leaders, Respero's training is kind of a proven way to identify people in your church who have a gift for counseling and helping others. And it can be a powerful way to help make your church a genuine healing community. So they provide training and supervision that will allow your people to do great work and free up the pastoral staff, right? So, you know, I think we as pastors, we understand our job is to equip the saints for the work of ministry. And I think Respero then kind of digs a little deeper and actually gives those saints sort of the hard and soft skills of how to do the work, right?
Yeah.
So go to Respero, RESPERO.org, and click on the Counselor Training tab. Let's get back to the show.
The way that I would probably want to frame it then would be to say, if you are looking for, like if this is something you're wanting, if this is something you're seeking, rather than trying to convince people that they should want it or should seek it.
Yeah.
Because I do think, I mean, I know a lot of people who, you know, they are part of churches, but it is difficult for them because church triggers them in a lot of ways. You know, but they're like working through it. They're like, oh, this is hard for me, but you know, I want to be here. And I do experience some healing in this environment, you know, and so I think that probably has to be part of the context is this something you're seeking? Like, is this a desire that you have? Is this, are you thinking like, I need to be plugged into a body of believers again? I know my healing is going to come through that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That's another issue. And let's talk about how to look, you know, signs of a healthy church, signs of an unhealthy church.
Right. And that's what we have with Marge here. She's, you know, moving towards us, which is one of the reasons why we're doing this podcast is because it's not, I feel like there's less presumption here. We're responding to a question versus
So
telling abuse survivors what they need to know. Right.
Yeah, right? Totally. So hopefully that comes across. Like if you're listening to this,
yeah,
and you are like, I don't want another church. that's fine. God bless you. We totally understand that.
Yeah.
But yeah, if you're like Marge and you're like, wait a second, I actually would like to plug back into some kind of church experience, but I don't know how to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. So those are the first two things. The third thing is I do have thoughts on this, but I want to just own and name publicly that I think I've never been sexually abused by a clergy or pastor person in a church. Mm-hmm. So I've never actually had to do this.
Yeah.
So I think that my perspective could have less value and weight and importance than somebody who has.
Yeah.
Or somebody who's tried, who's experienced that in a church and tried to find another one and failed. I think either the person who's experienced the abuse and found another church, or the person who's experienced abuse and hasn't, have valuable things to offer to this question. Yeah. And so that's you, listener, and you want to reach out to us, please send us an email.
Yeah.
Maybe we can even chat about it on the podcast at a future time. But I just want to recognize that my experience to this is not as proximate as others.
Yeah.
Fourth, it's interesting. Her second sentence, sometimes we don't have options to find a church with a woman pastor. Mm-hmm. So we have to find a new way to walk in some form of community with the male side of Jesus's community of believers. So I think trading on the fact that the vast majority, if not all, of clergy and pastoral sexual abuse happens from men.
Yes.
And I don't think that's just because men make up a larger percentage of pastors in America or the world. Yeah. Yeah. I think there's something deeper than just, it's not just a numbers game here.
Right. Well, it mirrors the pastor numbers mirror the numbers probably in the general population, right?
Probably,
so the overwhelming, I don't have the stat in front of me, but I'm 99% certain that the overwhelming majority of anybody who commits any kind of sexual abuse is a male.
Yeah. And I think there's something underneath that that's worth just naming, and that is if I'm going to begin to explore what would it look like for someone to find a church after that, one of the things that churches who will consider and actually do hire women pastors, one of the things that is more likely to be different about that church is that that they've done some work with the authoritarian hierarchical structures that the church has often operated in that I'm convinced are overwhelmingly not safe for women and children.
Or even
anybody who's not like a white cisgendered male.
Yeah.
These structures are not as safe for them as places that are less authoritarian and less hierarchical.
Yeah. Yeah. And the presence of a woman pastor is, I hear you naming, it's not a guarantee that you've really dealt with all of that.
Nope.
But it is an indication that there is a desire to deal with it, or at least an attempt to deal with it.
Yeah. It's like one of those artifacts of like, okay,
yeah,
it's not a slam dunk, but now I've got some indication that this could be an environment or a culture that where abuse isn't normalized, hidden, celebrated.
Right.
You know.
Yeah. Yeah. That's definitely the case. I mean, I know a lot of women pastors who talk about the structures that they are still up against, even though they're installed, ordained, they're in position as the pastor, but they're still up against these patriarchal structures, you know, in the minds of people, you know, all kinds of things that they bump up against. But I think there is, them being in that position, a woman being in that position is going to see and be able to reckon with those things in a much greater way than a man in those positions. Cause there's a lot of this stuff that
you know, I had to learn how to see.
You know,
I didn't automatically see it, but women in that position are usually very much like, oh yeah, you know, I see this right away. So,
yeah. I forget what number we're on, Ben.
I don't know. You said we'll five, but I don't know. It doesn't matter.
Number eight.
It probably doesn't matter. Number
Somebody will know what number we're on, and that'll really bother them. I think we're on five.
Okay.
Six. Okay. The next. Yeah. In addition to the previous list.
Yeah.
I would say that one of the things that I've noticed increasingly in the last 10 years is the way that trauma from other environments in my life shows up in the local church.
You sure? Yeah.
Right? So, so I've experienced trauma in my family of origin and a ministry position. So I have what's known as complex PTSD. Mm-hmm. It's not a slam dunk that if you were sexually abused by a pastor, your body would store that and read that as trauma, but mm-hmm. it's likely.
Right.
It's usually, it wouldn't be surprising if you had trauma, right? Sure. So one of the things that I would just suggest or recommend to like a friend or even to Marge mm-hmm. is to be in a relationship with a trained professional who is able to help you process and deal with your trauma.
Yeah.
Now that may go without saying, but increasingly I've become aware that, you know, our trauma can come online really anywhere, anytime, doesn't ask for our permission,
right.
you know, and it doesn't behave itself in right. ways that, maybe other parts of us do.
Yeah.
But because the local church deals with such intimate, vulnerable, relational, core central aspects of who we are as relational beings and spiritual beings and emotional beings, I think there's a whole lot of landmines for someone who has trauma. I think it can come online rather easily.
Yeah.
In a local church. So that'd be, I don't know. That would be something I would encourage.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's, you know, I think it's wise, to do that because when our trauma comes online, it doesn't behave. It doesn't announce itself as like, hey, this is something from the past that's showing up in the present in a situation that reminded you of the situation that's in the past, but it's not it's not the same situation. Like, you know, all of that stuff that we need to like cognitively process that it's helpful for us to process as we like, you know, after trauma comes online, after we get triggered, you know, for example,
right.
Like none of that is available to us in the moment. And we often need help to like understand what's happening to us.
Yeah.
Right. Because it's, again, our bodies are, the trauma comes online, your body says you're in danger and it looks for why you're in danger and it finds the easiest target. It finds the easiest thing that might be causing, you know, the danger. Right. And it, you know, you just need help. We all need help to untangle like, wait a second, what's really going on here for me?
Yeah. Right. And so you can take responsibility for your own reaction, your own body. You can begin to get some healing. You can take care of yourself in those environments. Right. Mm-hmm. Becoming aware of what triggers me or what makes me reactive or how my body responds in trauma, I'm better able to have boundaries and take care of myself in places that are, that can be triggering. So it's not only to take care of yourself, but it's also, I think, one of the benefits of dealing with my trauma and talking to trained professionals about abuse, right, is that I become more acquainted with abusive ways of relating.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, tactics and strategies, how systems, like even how systems work, you know, habits of systems that are, make it really difficult to identify and hold accountable abusive people. And so I think the more aware we can become, the less sort of like, you know, one of the worst things to do when looking for a church is spend a significant amount of time building deep relationships until you come into that, you see that red flag, that's a non-negotiable for you, right?
Yeah.
And so, you know, I think, especially in this post-COVID world of like spiritual and relational fatigue that everybody seems to be in, it the sooner we can see, oh, this place isn't really trauma sensitive, and not only that, they don't have a desire or a value for it.
Yeah.
And so, even though these people are great and they say the right stuff, I'm not confident that this place is knows what it means to create a space where abuse is less likely to happen.
Yeah. And that's like coming to see those habits and patterns. Like, what's necessary is working through the things that trigger us.
Yes.
Because sometimes they are triggered by, oh, that's a bad habit or a bad pattern that I'm seeing. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's benign. You know what I mean? Like, sometimes those patterns are like, oh, well, that's, you know, that person just has a deep voice, like the person that that hurt me.
Right.
Or, you know, that kind of a thing. And so, like, I think that's really good advice, because to understand what is truly dangerous and not a good situation, and what is a benign situation that, you know, you might just need to be careful about getting triggered. Like, all of that is really important to work through and figure out, you know?
Yeah.
And it's difficult to, you know, most of us need help.
Yep.
Doing that.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't, it's number eight, number D. I don't know.
We're on. No, I want to say too, I think, you know, there's kind of this confluence between sort of the explosion of awareness about how abuse works. Mm-hmm. You know, I think it really, it's about in the last 15 years and maybe more acutely in the last 10 years.
Yeah.
With sort of the emergence of like the Me Too movement, and how women are reclaiming power to name sexual predators or sexual abuse in their life. And then the Church Too movement. Right. And then I think you even have maybe more peripheral movements that also name how power is misused, like Black Lives Matter. Mm-hmm. And I think that's injected into the nomenclature, into pop culture, words like narcissist,
right.
Words like acronyms like DARVO, words like gaslighting. Right. Yeah. And I don't think we had any of these words. People who weren't trained professionals didn't say DARVO 15 years ago.
Right.
And so I think what that's done is that's created, and that has gone on with sort of the emergence of and propagation of online communities like Gravity Commons, mm-hmm. where people kind of find each other. You know, there's a lot of Facebook groups I'm a part of where sex abuse survivors in a church from churches mm-hmm. where they find mm-hmm. each other. And, right. and I look, I'm a pastor of a local church. I love our local church. We're not going to be there this Sunday, Ben, we're going to be traveling together and I'll miss mm-hmm. our local church, but right. I'm not one of those pastors who makes like black and white hard lines around what constitutes a church. Maybe I should. I'm an Episcopal priest, you know. You got to be where the sacrament's celebrated or else it doesn't count. But I think there are spaces that don't consider themselves a church that function like a church.
Yeah.
Especially for people who are moving towards tentatively towards healing and maybe some kind of hope that they could believe again.
Yeah.
Right? And so even though Marge, I think, is talking about a local physical church, right, that meets mm-hmm. in a physical location,
right,
I don't want to disparage or belittle these little micro expressions of church that don't even use that word.
Yeah. And now a word from a sponsor.
Hey, it's Sean Nelson, founder and CEO of LoveSack and host of the Let Me Save You 25 Years podcast. Curious how successful people really made it? Tune in to hear from guests like Travis Mills, a true American hero, and Nate Checkitz, co-founder of Roan. We dive deep into their stories and lessons that shape them so you can skip the trial and error and get straight to the good stuff. You can find me wherever you get your podcasts. That's Let Me Save You 25 Years with Sean Nelson. Listen now.
People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. The hiring process can be slow and overwhelming. Simplify hiring with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. That's Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Terms and conditions apply.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Synovus.com.
All right, let's get back into our conversation.
There is a need, I think, to be able to connect. And that's one of the good things about, you hear a lot about the bad things about social media, and they're, you know, I agree with them. There are, you know what I mean? Like, there's super problematic, bad things about, the way that we connect online and how it's been kind of weaponized against our own brains and all of that kind of thing. But there's also some goodness in people being able to connect across time and space that they weren't able to do before. You know what I mean? There's relatives and loved ones, you know, who live in different countries who can connect, you know, by text message and WhatsApp and, you know, all of these other things that you can connect. And, you know, there's these
Twitter
online
spaces
communities.
All kinds of stuff.
You know, and this is a big part of our, you know, our recent rebrand from Gravity Leadership to Gravity Commons was realizing that I think one of the things that's began to happen is that Gravity was becoming a place, an online community, in a sense, a place where we could talk about these things, where people could ask, you know, questions that would have gotten kicked out of their former church. And, you know, there's a lot of folks who they don't go to church or they can't find a church that feels safe to them. And they're able to join communities like Gravity Commons that do feel safe. And, you know, sure, it's not in person. It's not, you know, it's not ideal. It's not maybe the fullness of what you might hope for in community, but, you know, that doesn't need to prevent us from seeking those connections and finding goodness in them.
So, I mean, I know that's a whole lot of answering the question, without technically answering the question so far. I mean, really. But I guess as I move towards answering the question, if I can just speak like really frankly for a second, I haven't found a church that's committed to hierarchy and authoritarian logics that feels safe to me. I mean, I just don't know. I mean, I'm talking about like old conservative, mostly white denominations, right? And I guess I mean, they may exist. Churches in these denominations may exist. I don't even think I need to name them because all the church abuse scandals are coming from them. Right?
What would you say, Matt? So, churches that are committed to authoritarian, hierarchical, you know, that kind of a thing is what you said. What would indicate to you that a church is committed to that or a denomination is committed to that? What are some artifacts of you know, maybe this is part of practically answering the question of like, be careful of these kinds of churches. Like what would be some signs that you could look for that a church is committed to authoritarian leadership styles, et cetera?
Yeah. I guess there's like, and I'm having to learn about this, right? So I'm in the process of trying to learn and name how this works. Because Ben, you and I are Episcopal priests.
Yeah.
There are not many church structures that are more hierarchical than ours.
Right. We're inside of and inhabit a hierarchical church structure.
Right.
We have a bishop who, you know, who is over us.
Right.
And we are over, you know, in some ways, the congregation. Yeah.
Right.
That's true.
But the logic within the hierarchy isn't about, it doesn't run on like coercion and obedience. It runs on something different. And so I'm sort of at the end of how language works for me. I'm trying to name like aesthetics even, or logics, or implicit assumptions. But maybe one artifact is that in authoritarian hierarchies, there's a big emphasis on obedience and conformity. And if you deviate from, if you don't comply, or if you question authority, or if you're not a yes man, or if you bring any kind of negative feedback or criticism, it's met with defense, deflection, or you are demeaned or dismissed.
Yep.
Right? Yep. So I guess one of the artifacts is, can you disagree with the pastor?
Right.
Or the leader?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Can anybody?
Yeah, and how do they respond to that? I think another artifact, you know, and you'd have to hang out for a while maybe to see this, but, you know, can the leader apologize? You know?
Really apologize.
Yeah. Can the leader really apologize and say, oh, you know what? I was thinking this, even for small things. I think that's a good sign too. Like, can the leader apologize for small things, you know, not like huge mistakes. I mean, that'd be good to apologize for too. but even like small things, I think, you know, like it's one of the things that I have learned to look for, in a leader, because I've been part of organizations that were led by people that eventually I realized, I was like, you know what? This person never apologizes for anything, not even something really minor, really small, wouldn't even be a big deal to apologize for it. They just can't do it.
Right.
It's a bad sign.
Yeah, it is a bad sign.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think that's, good. Anything else?
I mean, do leaders really empower others? You know, or is there sort of a consolidation and a coalition building? Right? So to me, it's like, are people empowered? Can other people like carry real authority in the church?
Yeah.
A few other thoughts, like, is there an explicitly publicly named reporting of abuse policy?
Yeah.
Is it posted somewhere? You know? Mm-hmm. Do leaders have to go through training on how to identify sexual abuse, especially with children? Mm-hmm. And is that training, are they public about it?
Yeah.
You know? These are some things that, you know, up until 10 years ago, we didn't really do as a church. Because it was, I don't know, it's kind of like, I guess this stuff can't happen in a church. We better do something about this, you know?
Right. Yeah, we've realized we can't just rely on everybody's, you know, good intentions or, you know, horror at the thought of it. It's like, well, we need to learn together.
Yeah.
How to actively prevent it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think, one of the reasons we have a co-pastoring model, distributed leadership, is because I think it's just really dangerous for one person to have all the power in a church. It's just, I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, I got two people at any point who can call me on my crap. And I feel like I need that.
Yeah.
And Ben, you need that. No, we all need that. Like, yeah, we all need that, right? So, like, I just think that that's how is power, how is authority held? How's it used? I mean, I've got friends who recently came out of a church that had lots of co-pastors, but anytime they disagreed with, like, there was a whole lot of sort of enmeshment and groupthink and weird kind of manipulative energy that happened in the church. And it was just as gross as like a top-down dictatorial kind of one person leading. Now, I don't think there was any sex abuse in this church, but I'm just saying not a structure. There's no structure that's perfect.
Right.
But I do think that things like accountability and transparency and like becoming trauma informed, becoming like informed about abuse and how to spot it, having policies like, you know, like we have a policy in our church that adult is never to be left alone in a room with a child during a church function. Like at any given time, there needs to be two adults in a room with children at every time. Yeah. And if that doesn't happen, let's say that doesn't happen and there is an adult in a room with a child while there's an official church thing happening, that needs to get reported even if nothing happens.
Right.
Right? So like there's a sense in which like we're building a culture that knows how to identify warning signs for abuse, and we can prevent even the opportunity for abuse to happen together.
Yeah. Those are some ways. I think that's good. Those are some things to look for that seem to indicate. I mean, sometimes it's really hard to tell until you're there for a while, which is, that's the hard part about this, is there's no, you know, there's like no perfect vetting process that will guarantee, oh, this is a safe place for you to be. Mm. I think that there's also a personal element to this as well, where I think there are things about churches that aren't necessarily explicitly harmful, but there might be things about a church that just might not be helpful for you.
Yeah.
You know? And so Marge mentioned, you know, it sounds like her desire would be to go to a church with a woman pastor, but she can't find that right now. But that might be a deal breaker for some other people. And it's like, that's okay if that's a deal breaker and you need to listen to that. If that's super important to you, some of these things are personal. You know, that's okay to have a list, you know, of deal breakers for yourself.
And I guess one, I just maybe close on this. So the question is, writing something on people finding a place in the body of Christ after pastoral clergy and sexual abuse. And I just, when I read that question, I come back to Jesus saying, "Woe to those who make one of these little ones to stumble. It is better for them to be thrown into the sea with a millstone tied around their neck than to do this." Mm-hmm. And I think of Jesus holding children on his lap. And so maybe as a word, like the person who sexually abused you, they left the body, you didn't. Mm-hmm. And so part of the damage done in sexual abuse is that the abused feel like they're the one in the middle of the sea with the millstone.
Yeah.
Not the one on the lap of Jesus. Yeah. Now, I know that could be used as like a bypassing statement. Hey, cheer up. That's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying that the Lord is near to the brokenhearted. And I know it can be hard to experience that when your body still screams in pain. And I'm sorry that is harder to experience, or maybe even impossible for you to experience because of what's been done to you. But I guess what I want to maybe just propose is that a lot of those who are harassed and helpless, like who've been harmed and injured. I hope we'll one day discover that they are nearer to God than they ever could have imagined.
Yes. Well, amen. Maybe that's a good place to wrap this one up.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the body of Christ, the resurrected body of Christ bears holes and scars. Mm-hmm. And so there's a place in the metaphysical, the cosmic body of Christ for those of us who have holes and scars. We belong, you know, yeah. We belong there.
Yeah.
And so,
because Christ has gone there.
Yeah. Because that Christ has in his mercy, I think, decided that his resurrected body would have holes and scars. So, I guess those scars are real, and many times they lead to like some sort of spiritual death. But it's possible even in that grave for life to emerge. So,
yeah. Well, listener, thanks for joining us on this little conversation
and
we had about this question.
March, thanks for the question. And again, friends, if you have, maybe you've done this, or maybe you've tried to do this and have been unsuccessful, or maybe you know people who have. If you want to comment or opine, feel free to send us a message at podcast@gravitycommons.com. And we'll visit with you next time.
Peace, friends.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of the Gravity Podcast. If you're finding it helpful, please tell your friends about it. Word of mouth is the best advertising. Ratings and reviews online also help others find the podcast. And don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss an episode. To join discussions about the podcast and lots more, join us in the Gravity community. It's free to join, and you can connect with other listeners to the podcast to talk about faith, spirituality, and whatever else comes up. Also, Ben and I hang out there a lot. To join, go to gravitycommons.com/community. The Gravity Podcast is produced by Ben Sternke and Matt Tebbe. Aaron Sternke edits and mixes the podcast. You can check out his mixing, engineering, and production work at aaronsternke.com. And we'd love to hear from you. To record a question or comment for us, go to gravitycommons.com/message and click the Start Recording button. You can also email us at podcast@gravitycommons.com. Catch you next time.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.